Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
All right. Welcome, everyone, here to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. I'm Heather Choate. With me is Mark Johnston, international marriage expert. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing wonderful today. How about yourself?
Good. I just had a glorious breakfast. It's beautiful fall outside. My girls are making all kinds of fall decorations, and we put up the Halloween stuff yesterday. Super fun. My son's trying to rescue a little turtle. So lots of stuff going on. Life's good. Yeah, free turtle, expensive tank. I'll just say that much.
I can see the arguments from kids. Well, you know, we don't have to pay for the turtle. You know, what's the big deal? It's a free turtle. But yeah, it's not a free turtle.
Yeah, and now it's turned into turtle and catfish and goldfish and some little tetras that turned into feeder fish, and so on we go. But it's a beautiful thing, so yeah. All right, awesome. So with the turtle conversation out of the way, today we're going to be talking about four secrets to a healthy marriage in less than 6 months, even if your spouse is currently checked out, which I know most of you watching are going to say, yep, that's my situation. So how do I get there in less than 6 months? And how can Mark and I say such a bold claim? Well, because we've been doing this so long, we know what works and what doesn't work. So we're going to share some of the common mistakes that couples make when their spouse is pulling away, and how you can avoid those. But before we get to that, let's share our client win of the week. This one came as a comment to a post in the Thriving Marriage Facebook group. Name changed, but we'll just call her Sally. That's a good name change.
We didn't definitely didn't make that up just on the spot right there.
No, not at all. Sally.
Just the name. Just the name is given. Yeah.
But the question was asked, how is what High Thrive does different than counseling? And so I thought this was a great response. So Mark, do you want to share what Sally here?
Yeah, so Sally was responding to someone else, and she was saying, hey, that Thriving Marriage puts out a lot of similar products, and they are all good at actually teaching relationship skills, which is something lacking in marriage counseling. And yeah, I would agree with that. That statement is, you know, that's a big focus of ours, is actually having lessons and, you know, teaching skills related to the relationship. Anyways, Sally goes on, my husband told me in February that he wanted a divorce, and I started working through the modules of Relationship Reboot and a coaching program, the PATH coaching program. We are still married and really happy now. And she shares the link to that.
Yeah, which is, if you're curious about the Relationship Reboot program, that is our online course that does not involve any coaching, but that's relationshiprebootcourse.com/about. And you can see what the Relationship Reboot course is. But of course, we always encourage the better help there, which is the coaching, which she also did as well, the PATH coaching. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. So Mark, and everyone listening, if you don't know us, maybe you don't know that we have been doing this for a long time, and that we've helped tens of thousands of students. We have like over 15,000 active students right now in our programs, and we have, you know, several dozen active coaching clients as well right now. And we've helped hundreds over the last years. So we've seen a lot of commonalities. And I think that's one of the beautiful things that we are able to help people that are struggling in their marriage with, is that we have a perspective that, you know, even a really well-trained or educated counselor might not, because maybe they've worked with a few dozen, but they haven't worked with hundreds or thousands and seen the, you know, the breadth and scope that we have when it comes to relationship struggles and relationship challenges and what it really takes to heal a relationship. So we've identified, I mean, there's a lot of common mistakes that people make, but we've kind of narrowed it down to five today that we're going to talk about. And we're going to talk about it in kind of a format here of like, here's the problem that you guys may be facing, some really common problems, and then the mistake that most people are making, and then the problem that that mistake then creates, and then what we do instead, and how we're able to get people such incredible results so much faster than anything else out there. So right off the bat, of course, you guys are here because more often than not, your spouse is saying, hey, I want a divorce. I want to separate. I want some space. I need to find myself. I'm in love with you. I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I'm in love with someone else. I'm having an affair, right? All these different things. So Mark, when people have that kind of a problem, what do they typically do? What do we see that they normally do?
Well, I usually see it's a big announcement for your partner to come in and say, okay, well, I'm wanting a divorce or to separate or whatever it happens to be. The usual response is some amount of, well, honestly, desperation. It's a big issue, but almost always the push is saying, okay, let's go to therapy or counseling. Maybe they personally themselves start looking at YouTube or some self-help books. They're going about this and they're trying to do whatever they can. Part of the problem with a lot of this is basically the direction that they're taking in a lot of these solutions. If they're doing like a do-it-yourself route with like self-help books or YouTube or things like that, there's some good information out there. I mean, hey, we have stuff on YouTube, right? So it can't all be bad. But at the same time, I seem to see like a lot of people doing some self-diagnosing and say, okay, well, this is the problem, so I'm going to look at videos on this thing over here, and it might not actually be the problem. So they start pursuing solutions that might be less effective or perhaps even ineffective. Even further, let's say that this hypothetical person is pushing counseling. Let's go to counseling, let's see a therapist, whatever. I do see issues with that. Now, I'm not going to say that like it's always totally ineffective, but I just know what the atmosphere is, the environment is out there, like out there in terms of therapy. And a lot of those cases, people are seeking out a counselor who doesn't have a lot of a focus on relationships. And so, the result is, there's some ineffective sort of advice going on, because mostly what that therapist might be seeing is anxiety or depression type cases or other run-of-the-mill mood type disorders, things like that, eating disorders. I don't know about you, Heather, but like earlier on in my own marriage, as an example, so my wife and I sought out some counseling for some specific issues, and we went to a general therapist, and I remember walking away after like 3 or 4 sessions with my wife, and we were just kind of thinking to ourselves, we're like, okay, I guess we'll try out what this therapist is asking us to do. But ultimately we concluded like it wasn't really helpful. And so we said, we'll try to figure this out on our own because the therapist wasn't really all that helpful. And I see these kind of things way too often. Like there's a lot of issues just going in, like just trying to decide how you want to approach getting some help. And that's what I'm going to, like, I could go on and on and on from like I was talking about maybe therapists not specializing in marriage issues, or perhaps you are pushing way too much on therapy and your partner's pulling away and there's some issues around that. A lot of these things, if you're not going to the right sort of person, if you're not going to the right sort of expert, while some of these solutions might work in some cases, they don't always work. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this, Heather?
Yeah, so I'll be the first to raise my hand and say, yeah, we did that as well when relationship was struggling with Ben and I. We've been married almost 16 years, and we've definitely had our share of marriage challenges. And going to therapy, counseling, turning to friends and family for advice, watching YouTube videos, the self-help books. I've read The Love Dare like 3 or 4 times, and The Love Languages at least, I think I'm on the third time. I'm going through it again just for for fun. And yeah, and all those things, it's like there is value, but the problem is that it's like getting little tiny bits and pieces of information and then trying to just see what sticks. And the problem is that it doesn't really give you a specific direction. It doesn't give you a system to follow. It's often very ineffective. And unfortunately, like we hear something like, oh yeah, that's it. That's what I need to do. And then we try that with our spouse and it completely backfires, but we don't even know why. So then we just kind of give up and think there's no hope. And the bottom line is all of those things, they just take too long. The counseling takes too long. We've talked to people that have been in counseling for years. I mean, clients have been 20, 25 years in therapy together and they're still not anywhere closer to resolving their problems, you know? And when we're just trying to do it ourselves, we do not have the perspective to solve our problems on our own. Because if we did, then we wouldn't have those problems. Like they wouldn't be problems for us if we already knew how to solve them. And so the bottom line is that when it takes too long, is that you move further and further away and more often than not end up going towards divorce. And that's not what we want for you, right? Because it takes too long if your spouse is saying, I want out, I'm having an affair, I'm in love with someone else, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. You just do not have time to waste. You know, at most you have maybe a year, you know, and more often than not, you have just a few months. And now with, you know, we're in the middle of still dealing with COVID and everything, but courts are opening up and there are more and more marriages that are moving towards that. And so we're seeing a huge influx of people coming and asking us for help because they're realizing, okay, this can actually happen now. And so if you don't have time on your side, then what do? Right? So what we do is we help you save your marriage in 6 months or less without wasting those years in therapy and risking divorce. And so we've got this proven process that gives you direction. So you know exactly where you're going and why you're going there. And we help you to know exactly what steps to take with your spouse that are going to be effective and not unintentionally backfiring or pushing them further away. And that brings to the next biggest challenge that we see here is like, okay, so I get that it takes too long. Those methods just take too long and they're ineffective and they often backfire. And even if I'm doing my very best effort, I still don't know how to solve this on my own. But what if my spouse just won't work on it with me? And we see that a lot because more often than not, when your spouse is saying those things and making those choices, you know, they don't want to work on it with you. So what do you do when they don't go to counseling or they don't go to coaching? They don't want to do therapy. They don't want to come listen to a podcast like this. They don't want to attend a masterclass. They don't want to talk to you about it, right? So what do most people do, Mark, when their spouse won't work with them? What are some of the common mistakes that we see people make?
Well, what's ironic is a lot of the times their approach or their attempt at solutions is right at the heart of like why things are bad in the first place. So like, okay, my spouse won't agree to go work on things. So I'm going to either retreat and stonewall, or I'm going to make a bunch of demands. I'm going to beg and plead and cry and manipulate and, you know, be desperate. And I would say a good like 75% of our clients like fall into that category where, because it's a big deal if your husband or wife is saying, hey, I'm ready to leave, and it's this big surprise bombshell that they just dropped in your lap. Well, what are people going to do? They're immediately going to be like, okay, please stay with me. Please, you know, why don't we work this out? And, you know, what do we see, Heather? What you see is a lot of times this ends up pushing the partner away, all this desperation. And I can tell you just, you know, specifically, I'm going to like why that is, you know, if their goal is already like heading out the door, they're saying, I need to focus on myself. I need to be happy on my own. I need to find some happiness. And you're saying, hey, why don't you come back? Why don't you come back over here? Pay attention to me. I need you. It's really going exactly opposite from what their aim is, their goal is. And so a lot of times as like our clients like try to hold on tighter to the marriage, their partner is just heading further and further away. Yeah.
That is exactly what we see. you know, I do a masterclass usually once a week. And so over the last years, I've talked to a lot of people, you know, thousands of people. And at this point, this is where most people have a huge aha moment. And they're like, oh my goodness, I realize that's what I'm doing. I'm either giving up because I feel like, well, if they won't work on it with me, then there's nothing I can do, which we've proven is false, that there's so much you can do. The problem is that when your spouse pulls away from you, you feel like they're calling all the shots, right? And it doesn't feel like you have any control here. It feels like they have all the control and all the power in this situation, and you tend to feel really helpless and like a victim. And you feel like there's nothing I can do. And it's, you couldn't be further from the truth. And why can we say that? Because we've seen it so many times that 95% of the time you can actually turn it around and you can do it on your own. If those are, you are watching on our YouTube channel, there's a beautiful testimonial there from Tina who said, I wasn't sure I could do it on my own, but now I absolutely know that you can do it on your own by yourself. If your spouse is not on board, you should not just give up. Right? You need to take your power back and realize that you do have so much influence and opportunity here. And more often than not, if your spouse is talking to you at least a couple times a week, we'll go into that point in the next problem, but you know, there's so much more hope than you possibly can realize. And so it's kind of like, I feel like, what's a good analogy here? I feel like there's a medical analogy, like, okay, so my son was just listening to the Wasp song on YouTube. If you guys have ever heard it, it has like millions of views. I've been stung by a wasp. And it's like this little kid gets stung by a wasp and he immediately starts bawling and says, I'm dying. I'm dying. And it's super annoying now to me because my kids listen to this song over and over and over. Anyway, but it's kind of like taking, I got a bee stung or a wasp stung, you know, and now I'm dying. So it's just like you're hyperinflating this whole situation and making it a lot more dramatic and hopeless than it actually is. So like a doctor could immediately go in and assess with that child, okay, are you actually allergic to this bee or is this just a severe emotional reaction? And be able to clearly assess what needs to happen, right? And then solve it quickly. So that's like what we do. We can clearly assess what's going on here, scientifically diagnose exactly what's going on here and show you what is possible. And if it's not possible for you to save your marriage, then we'll let you know that, right? And we'll help you make the appropriate actions given that situation. But more often than not, just giving up just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? And it's not actually the only option that you have. And then, of course, the demanding is only going to push them further away. And the manipulation and the begging, what happens is, like Mark said, they've already made up their mind. This is what they want to do. And all of those things only create more distance between you because you don't feel safe to them and you don't feel safe to you either. An interesting thing, like I want you to think about that. If you have been in a state where you're demanding or you're begging or you're manipulating, if your spouse actually did come back to you right now, would it feel secure to you? Like just think about that for a minute. I work on this with sometimes when I'm talking to people on the phone or, you know, doing a session with them. Like if they actually came back right now just because you were doing those things, would you actually feel secure about their decision? You wouldn't, right? It's because why? It's not built on a solid foundation. It's not built on both of you wanting to make it work. It's built on your demands. And so it's just that power play. It puts you right back into the drama triangle. And that's not where you want to be. And even if they did come back right now, then eventually it would fall apart again because you haven't healed those underlying things. So all of those things, they absolutely backfire. So what we want to do, right, is we help you save your marriage, even if your spouse won't work on it with you, even if they won't attend sessions with you right away, even if they won't come to coaching with Mark and I or whatever, you know, that's where we start you at. And we can show you how to take the pressure off, how to increase understanding, and how to build a solid foundation so that you both actually want to work on the marriage together, which is where you ideally want to be. So what if all that sounds really great, right? And you're like, okay, I get it. I'm going to have to go first. I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to go first, even though my spouse doesn't want to work on it with me. I'm willing to stop demanding. I'm feeling hopeless. I'm willing to stop manipulating and begging and desperation. I'm willing to do that. But what if they're not even talking to me? Now what, right? Which brings up our next most common problem is that your spouse isn't talking to you, maybe even at all, or they're just not talking to you about the important things that you want to talk about. They're putting up some walls and some resistance, some stonewalling. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know we have a lot of episodes on that, right, Mark?
Oh, yeah.
On stonewalling and getting communication open. So, Mark, what do we see when people are having a spouse that just won't talk to them or won't open up to them? What are the common things that they do and the mistakes that they make there?
Well, I'm even thinking of, like, even some current clients that I'm working with. I was just talking with someone just the other day, and they came on board to start working with me, and they're like, you know what, my wife wasn't talking to me, and I know you gave me some advice on this, but, you know, I over the weekend, I was just really worried about them going off and seeing someone else, and I blew up her phone. I sent, like, 50 text messages or something like that. And I was like, okay. You said 50 text messages to your wife because she wasn't answering the phone. And I asked him, like, well, what happened? He's like, oh, look, Mark, I know. Like, this, basically the result was, like, she just was getting really upset, and she started, if I'm remembering the situation right, she was threatening, like, some legal action to, like, in order to get a restraining order or to prevent that kind of, like, in her words, harassment. It was pushing her much further away. What we talked about during that session, we really started opening up a big discussion about, okay, well, what is his wife actually wanting in general? Not even from the relationship, just in general. And we started identifying, okay, well, she's wanting some amount of peace. We identified that she felt like, you know, whenever the two of them were interacting, there was a lot of tension and a lot of neediness. And so she's wanting some relief from a lot of that. And this is the kind of things that we talk about. You know, when he sent a few more messages after talking with me, I'm not going to say that things turned around immediately. Like I said, I'm still working with this client, but she actually responded, and they had a conversation, and it shifted into a phone call where previously, like, she was only texting him. But it's because, like, he wasn't really fighting her so much anymore. He wasn't so focused on himself, and he started to actually say, okay, like, let's look at what she's looking for with some of her actions and actually addressing those sort of things. That's a lot of what we see. Like, this is not an uncommon situation that we see with our clients. So this is exactly what we do. We take a deep look at this and say, hey, like, what's getting in the way here? What is your partner actually wanting, and how do we draw them in? How do we, like, actually help them to want to talk to you?
Right. Mark, I don't know about you, but I feel like, to toot our own horn, honestly, like, we do this really, really well. And I would say that, like, clients that come to us and they're committed to doing the coaching, right, and to applying it to their relationship, they're able to shift their communication from, you know, being really volatile before, maybe everything turned into a big fight, maybe there was a lot of anger and hostility, maybe there was a lot of name calling and nastiness and blaming, or maybe there was just a lot of that closed wall, you know, like that closed door, the walls up, and they're just not responding. Or maybe there's just not a lot of respect and understanding. There's a lot of miscommunication. And so I feel like this is something that we help people do. And it's such an important thing to do, actually, no matter what happens with your marriage, right? Even if you guys end up getting divorced, learning how to communicate and resolve these issues with respect and, like, reducing the tension so there's, like, a neutral zone, like a safe zone, is so, so important. especially with people that then have to go on and co-parent, and they have these children that are going to be in your lives no matter what. And so that other person's still going to be in your life no matter what, right? So it's really crucial that we learn how to do these things. And we've said it so many times, I feel like a broken record right now, but they're things that we're usually not taught. We're just not taught how to do this. It's not modeled to us. We didn't grow up with examples on how to do this. We typically tend to communicate in the way that we learned from our parents, or we go the like complete opposite in still a really unhealthy way. And that never really resolves any issues for us. And we never really learn how to communicate respectfully and to have understanding and then be able to work together as a team, even if we disagree. It's a big thing, but I feel like this is something that we absolutely help every single client when they apply this. They get there, and it's such a relief. I just want you guys to envision that for a little bit, about you guys both feeling like it's safe to talk about things, that your partner actually wants to talk about things, and that you feel like you've reduced all this tension and drama, and you have this like safe neutral zone. Now, I know a lot of you are wanting more than just a safe neutral zone. Like, you want the connection and the passion and the romance and all of that back. But this is one of the first steps when your spouse really won't talk to you. One thing that we always do in the masterclass, if you guys have joined me before, is take a pulse on your communication. Like, where are you guys at? Have you not talked for over a year at all? Like, never seen each other face to face, nothing? Have you not talked for, you know, maybe they blocked your phone, maybe you can only text? Do you talk 1 to 2 times a month over the phone? Do you talk 1 to 2 times per month in person? Do you talk 1 to 2 times per month a week? And it's interesting to see the range, the spectrum that we get. But the bottom line is, if you're able to talk even just a few times a month, there is hope for you. Like, there's incredible opportunity. Like Mark said, maybe you're only texting right now, like this client he was talking about, but we can help you to open that up to then a phone conversation. And then from a phone conversation to an in-person conversation. And again, bringing down that tension and creating this really safe neutral zone so you can actually talk about anything. Mark, what's your take on that? Anything that you see like really helps that we do differently than what other people do here that allows our clients to experience that?
Well, honestly, I think there's a lot of skill learning like that needs to happen in these sort of situations. Like you mentioned earlier, Heather, oftentimes we don't grow up just kind of learning about these sort of things. Typically, most people don't attend classes on communication. They may or may not get good examples from their parents. But, you know, I know even me and my own family, like, it's not like my wife and I argue in front of our kids. And so, like, that healthy example of how do we argue isn't always quite there. Now, I mean, I'm doing other things to help my kids learn some of these skills, but, like, you get what I mean. Like, that, there's not classes, there's not good examples. And so, you know, that's a big focus of ours, is, like, a lot of people just don't understand many of the principles involved in like winning someone over and actually opening up a conversation so it feels safe and people actually want to communicate. And, you know, I think like even in the win of the week with, it was talking about like, hey, we actually teach some relationship skills here. And that's like a big difference in terms of what we do.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to touch on here with communication is that when your spouse pulls away and they won't talk to you, I get that because Ben tends to be the one that avoids conversation and puts up walls and then it freaks me out. And so then I try to push him and I keep trying to bring it up and I keep trying to push for a resolution, right? Which only pushes them away more. And another really big mistake that I see so often, and I know Mark, you've seen this too, is that when your spouse is pulling away and they won't talk to you, you're still trying to resolve deep issues. Like, you're pushing to resolve the affair and you're pushing to bring up why they did this and how that hurt you and how they need to fix this and how you want to resolve all these deep issues. And one of the problems with that is that, yes, we do solve deep issues, but we need to do it in the right order. And when you're pushing your spouse to resolve deep issues and they've already got one foot out the door, or maybe even two, it's not the time. And that's a big mistake that a lot of people make, because to you, you just want to fix everything and you want to go into all the deep stuff because this person, you know, vowed to you and all these things, and you feel so justified in it and you feel like you want to heal it. But what happens is that your relationship at this point, if that's what's going on, often is not strong enough or healthy enough to handle that. I know, Mark, you've made a great analogy before, kind of like you wouldn't bring in someone to do a heart surgery if, you know, they had some other major health issue and you knew they just couldn't survive that. I didn't say it very well. You've said it much more articulately in the past. Do you remember the one?
I can't remember like what I've even talked about. Okay. I'm sure I've said something along those lines. It's not smart.
I remember it was very articulate and I was like, oh, that's such a good one. It just illustrates the point here, but it's true. Like you can't do, like in the medical world, they cannot do some of these really intense surgeries if the patient isn't strong enough to survive the surgery. And so in a way, when we look at your relationship, we do that root assessment with you and we uncover to say, hey, is the relationship strong enough to talk about the affair right now? Is it strong enough to talk about what happened 2 weeks ago or 2 years ago? And if it's not, then we need to push pause on that and build up some strength and some health in the relationship so that it is in a place that's strong enough to handle solving the root issues. So mm-hmm. I just want to put that out there because I see so many people pushing to resolve those things and your relationship may just not be healthy and strong enough to handle it right now. So we can help you get to a place where your relationship is healthy, and then we can resolve those deeper issues when it's the right time, so it doesn't backfire and actually make things worse.
Well, it's almost like a lot of times what I'll describe when work with people, I say it's almost like you've started over again and you're like in a dating scenario. And so imagine like if you are in a dating situation and it's on the second date and you're saying, okay, now let's commit to each other completely and I can't have you talking to anyone else, and we're going to set a date where we're going to renew our vows, or, you know, if it's a dating situation where we're going to get married, it doesn't match up with what's going on. It's the same sort of thing.
Exactly. And I know that feels counterintuitive because you have all this history together and you've made all these promises and you have all this stuff. And so you feel like justified in it. But the bottom line is it's going to backfire when you push too hard on that. All right. That leads us to our next problem, Mark. What is another really common situation that we see? And this one, I feel like, is really unique to what we're talking about because no one else is really talking about this and how important it is. And most people don't even realize that it's really vital. So with that being said, what do you feel like is the next thing here that most people have a problem with?
A lot of it, if you're at a point where your spouse is saying, hey, I'm heading out the door, very likely there has been a narrative built up around your relationship or about you in particular, some sort of negative story that's going on. So they might be saying, well, there's nothing that we can do to fix it, which is a story. Or they might say, you know, my husband or my wife is, you know, is an ass or something. Like they're just a complete jerk to me all the time, which is, you know, there might be some truth to it, but there's a story about what your interactions are looking like. And a lot of times here, like if you are trying to make changes, if you're trying to fix things, you're working against this. So you might be doing something positive, like I'm going to approach this argument very calmly and collected, and I'm going to be very even, and I'm going to try to figure out what's going on. And then they might misinterpret that as, oh, my partner there is being very cold and calculating. They're trying to figure out how to manipulate me on something here. Like, who knows what the story is? But what we see over and over again is there's this, there is a narrative that's been built up, and even though you might be doing positive things towards fixing the relationship, you're working against this narrative and either being immensely slowed down or completely rejected as you're doing something positive, which confuses confuses a lot of people. They're like, well, I'm doing this X, Y, and Z. Why is my partner still upset at me when I'm doing something nice to them for them? And this is exactly what it's about. Either they don't believe that you've made changes. They feel like the changes that you're making are selfish. Maybe they, you know, they simply don't care anymore. They've become apathetic towards the relationship. But that's, you're right there, Heather. I think that is more of a unique focus of ours, is where we really try to target this narrative that's built up around these situations. What about you? What are you seeing with this?
Yeah, I see that, like, one of the biggest tendencies that we have when our spouse has a negative story or belief about us is that we get defensive. We try to prove it isn't true, right? And, you know, sometimes we even go into all those positive changes like you talked about. But when we get defensive and trying to prove it isn't true, then it just becomes us, like me against them, right? It's me against my spouse, and it's this battle of wills and like trying to prove who's right and who's wrong. And even if you get into a really positive state, you're like, okay, I'm going to show you that that isn't true about me. It often doesn't work. Why? Well, because this belief that they have about you, they built up over the past weeks, months, sometimes years. And the tricky thing is that whether it's true or it's not true, or maybe it's a mix of both, maybe it's a little true and untrue, actually doesn't matter, because to them, it is true. So to you, it matters a lot, especially if it's not a true belief, it's completely unfounded, right? And you're like, how could you believe that about me? To you, it matters a lot. But to them, like, it's true to them. And we just need to recognize that every belief that someone has is true to them, whether it's actually true or not. And so all the logic and the reasoning and the evidence that you can show them that, hey, that isn't true, won't matter. It won't make a single difference more often than not with your spouse, because what it really is a self-defense mechanism. They're doing it to protect them from some kind of pain, protect them from getting hurt again, or they're doing it just so they don't have to feel so guilty or have shame about what they're doing. So it's like a justification or an excuse. And that self-defense mechanism or justification for what they're doing is a protection against feeling what they don't want to feel. And so when you try to prove that it isn't true, it's just going to bounce right off them, because this is like the shield that they've got put up. And until we help them feel safe enough to put that shield down, they will continue to believe that about you. And all the positive change that you make in the world isn't going to be what it takes to let that go. And so that's one thing that Mark and I are so focused on in our coaching now, is that we realize that unless we help them let that story go, they'll continue to believe it. Even when you make all the positive changes in the world, even when you work on yourself and do all these things, it won't be enough. We have to help them let that story go. And so that's what we do, is we help them change their belief or story about you, so they actually see the possibility of being happy with you and want to be with you. Mark, could you share with us, like, I'm thinking of some clients right now, but you know, it's a beautiful thing when we get clients to the place where their spouse lets that story go. And when they let it go, like, it's gone for good, and then they can give you their heart fully again. And it's a beautiful thing to witness. So Mark, I don't know if you have any examples off the top of your mind of clients that we helped get to that place. And it's just amazing to see that and to be part of that.
Yeah, so I'm specifically thinking of a gentleman I've been working with, and his wife started pulling away. She said that, okay, you know, the typical, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. And, you know, soon after, she was expressing like, hey, you know what? I think I'm done, and I would like to start seeing other people. And this, of course, like, he was really upset about this and really worried about what was going to happen. I mean, this is not an uncommon scenario. Like, when I started working with him, we tried to identify, like, what was the justification? Like, it's really easy to say, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. But there's a lot that goes into a statement like that. And when we boiled it down, like, he was able to say, okay, well, like, there's been a lot of complaints around me being, you know, not listening to her or being mean. And when we identified further, like, what does being mean look like? It was this story of he's controlling or manipulative. And, like, we started looking at that, and he's like, okay, I can see how she might have believed this. When we got right down to it, we had to, like, identify, like, what was going into his behavior. Like, why, how could his wife interpret their interactions as being controlling or manipulative? What was going on with him, and how can, you know, he make a difference there? So we started to craft, like, what's that healthy story look like? How can he support this healthy story? What are some actions that he can take? Where can he reinforce this story with some bigger decisions, and so on and so forth? And it went from, like, her not wanting to talk to him. I think just this last, yeah, I just talked to him earlier this week, and he said, like, the previous week, he actually had gone out on a date with his wife, which was, like, it was a big deal. It was after some months of work, and, you know, I don't think they called it a date, but, you know, they went out for dinner and to see a show, and they were talking and having fun together, and she expressed how she enjoyed spending time with him. And so, like, that's a really big difference from where they started, where she's like, he's so controlling and he's trying to manipulate me and he doesn't listen to me and, you know, like, all these other things. And I'm much more interested in just ending this and seeing someone else.
Right. Yeah. Huge difference. And that's what the path process does. So guide you from the place where that's what's going on to the place where you're actually having fun together, wanting to spend time together, and helping them let that story go. There's this beautiful, well, I say it's beautiful, but people that go through it, and I've been through it too, it's not so fun. The teeter-totter effect, right? And when your spouse is like, maybe I'll come with you, maybe no, pulling away again. And then, oh no, now I really feel like I see some hope here. And then, oh no, I'm going back over here. That's what happens in the middle. And that's where a lot of people make some mistakes, where they give up, they think it's not working, they think I'm never gonna let the story go. And there are some, like, pretty, like, we can anticipate that there are some, like, tests that your spouse put you through about the story before they finally let it go. And one of the things that we do is help you overcome that teeter-totter effect, so that not only are they seeing the possibility of being happy with you in some moments, but that they fully see themselves happy with you again. And then that's when we resolve that whole teeter-totter effect, the going back and forth. I know that can be really exhausting and an emotional process. I think it's actually a really beautiful thing, because it means that we're now showing them that, hey, they don't have to believe that about us anymore, and that they are starting to see that there is a possibility of being happy here in the relationship. So if you're in that situation, I just want to give you guys some hope that it doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. It actually means that you're doing things really right. It's just, we got to keep going. So that being said, we're going to go to our last common problem, which is about trust. It is about broken promises. It can be about affairs, which is, of course, broken promises and broken trust. What do we see most people do when trust has been broken in their marriage? What are some of the common things that people do to try to solve it, and some of the mistakes that are made in this situation?
Well, when trust is broken, I almost always see, like, well, I'll typically see a reaction like, okay, I'll fix it. There's apologies, or there's, like, some attempts at doing something different. And that's all well and good. I would say, like, 95 or more percent, like a really high percentage of the people that we work with almost always hear these words. They're like, look, I can see that things have changed, but I just don't trust that the changes are real. I mean, this is the clients that we work with who we, like, are working closely to make sure that something's happening. And I expect those words exactly. It's exactly what we are talking about here. Trust has been broken, and now what? Like, there's all this tension, all this fear around, like, these sensitive topics, such that there's a lot of fear and this high amounts of vigilance and blames and accusations and you know, withdrawing from the relationship because, okay, like if anything even remotely bad happens in this area where trust is broken, then okay, it's all done. You know, I'm going to back off. I'm absolutely done with whatever's going on. So we see this and we see people stuck on this. They're like, well, okay, my partner hardly wants to talk to me. How am I supposed to build up trust? And, you know, Heather, you and I, we kind of expect this stage where, okay, we need to start building up some trust. And there's a lot of steps before this, but, you know, what I often talk about here is like a lot of what goes on in those early stages. Let's say we take this to an extreme example. Let's say that trust has been broken around respect. Is my partner going to respect me? Are they going to listen to me? Can we actually understand each other? If a lot of people will react with these extreme reactions, like I can change, I can do it. And like, if we took this to an extreme example, you know, the person who's trying to build up respect again might be crawling around on their hands and knees and licking the shoes of their partner. Like, of course I respect you. You're the center of my universe. Well, people might not be doing that exactly, but they might be doing these big gestures to try to demonstrate, in this case, respect. A lot of times though, like these actions are seen with a lot of skepticism. They're like, okay, this really isn't real. Like in my extreme example, they're gonna say, look, this isn't sustainable. You're not gonna continue to crawl around on your hands and knees, nor would I necessarily want it to go to this extreme level. And so almost always, like, we're at this point, like with the clients, we're like, okay, we've demonstrated that some things are different. How do we build up trust? And we go about trying to establish that the changes are sustainable, that they're real. Oftentimes it's by balancing some things out and making it, you know, not just about drawing your partner in, but like actually speaking up and like talking about your needs as well. But like, that's a whole, like we could go have many episodes just on this process, this arc of like drawing the partner in, getting to that point where they're saying, I don't trust that the changes are real, you know, and then establishing the trust afterward. That's like lots of steps there.
Yes, it is. But the bottom line is that when we get into, you know, trying to overcompensate, that's going to backfire. If trust has been broken, we often get into a lot of fear, a lot of pain, a lot of victimhood, right? Which is not going to get you where you want to be, ultimately. There's a difference between, I feel like, a victim and I'm going to put in some healthy boundaries so I feel safe, right? And that's often what we have to do with those that are in a state like that, so that they do feel safe and secure. And then that fear often causes a lot of hypervigilance to come up, right? Checking cell phones all the time, checking on where people are, blame, more accusations, or just withdrawal. Like, it doesn't feel safe, so I'm just gonna back away here, right? I need some space. But all of those things are only going to further perpetuate the distrust, right? And the distance. And so what we do, like Mark said here, it is a process, but we help many, many couples restore trust, even if it's been broken. So you both feel safe and secure in the relationship, and you can have a healthy relationship, not just now, but for life. And if you haven't listened to some of our podcast episodes where we interview some clients, I encourage you to do that too, because you can hear it from them in their words. Those people that have had a spouse that had affairs, multiple affairs, maybe they're the one that had the affair and now they're trying to make things right. And you can see how that actually looks going from start to finish. So just be really mindful of those common mistakes of the hypervigilance, the blame, the overcompensating, the accusations and the withdrawal, because if that's not where you really want to be, then we got to start doing some things in a different way, which is exactly what we can help you do. So right now you're probably thinking, okay, that all sounds great, but right, like what about finances? I don't have money. I'm trying to pay for two households. You know, we've got all these attorney fees. This is too expensive. I hear this, you know, there's a lot of challenges that come up financially when you've got this going on. And so a common mistake that a lot of people make is they try to do it themselves, right? They do therapy, other cheap options, or they just flat out give up. And like we've talked about before, those cheap options, those do it yourself, just try to solve it yourself, they're just ineffective, or they completely backfire, or they take too long. And so it still ends up leading towards divorce. And so what we help you do is help you save your marriage for less than the cost of your attorney fees, less than the cost of paying for two households, and save you $30,000 on divorce costs. Some people don't know that, but that's the average cost of divorce here in the United States is $30,000. And it often can be a lot more, you know, when you're dividing up assets and businesses and households and, you know, not to mention counseling and therapy for everyone and the kids and on and on and on it goes. I have some friends here that got divorced, let's see, probably about a year ago, maybe a little year and a half ago. And she continues to come to him, hounding him for more money, hounding him for more child support, hounding him. And he gives her everything she ever asks for. And now she's suing him for more. And he's a pilot like my husband. And it's just like, what do? You know, like, I don't make, you know, I'm not like a millionaire here. So it becomes very, very costly when you have all those attorney fees and you think that after the divorce is going to be over. Oh my goodness, I have that friend and I have several other friends that have had ongoing custody battles, ongoing extensive, you know, cost there. And not only just the financial cost, but of course the emotional cost. So just weighing that out, if you're going to compare apples to apples, I mean, where do you really want to put those dollars? Do you want to put it into the messy, costly divorce? Or do you want to put it into learning how to have a healthy relationship long term, right? So we've got some other, you know, things here, but we're going to just wrap it up with what you guys can do at this point. So with the program that we do, again, we can show you how to have a healthy relationship in 6 months or less. And if you're thinking, wow, I just don't really have time to save my marriage. I don't really have time. You know, we only have a few months, a few weeks left. Right? What can I do? Well, what Mark and I have seen is that it typically takes about 6 months to see really severe cases with like affairs or major issues turn around, major issues with restraining orders or things like that. If attorneys and all that is involved, it typically takes about 6 months or less. And if you don't have those kind of things going on, if you're more of like the friend stage, the roommate mode, or I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I need to find myself. I don't feel heard here. I don't feel respected. I don't feel happy. If those are more the issues that you have, it can often be in 3 months or less is what we've seen. So if that sounds like something you guys are interested, I encourage you to check out that 6 month coaching program that we have. The bad news is that we only have a few spots open. Mark, I know you're like booked out like crazy right now. So we really only have room for a few more clients right now. Yes, I know.
Yeah. My schedule actually gets pretty busy. I was actually like, really in a good place over the summer. And I was feeling like, hey, great work life balance. But yeah, it has been filling up quite a bit lately. So how many spots did you say? Like I could look at my calendar and like count it up, but I think it was something like 8 spots, right?
Something like only 8 spots right now. And of course we have several hundred people that watch our podcast every week and attend our master classes. So once spots are full, then they're full and you'll have to wait till there's another opening. And of course we don't want you to have to wait if this is speaking to you and you really want to move things forward in your relationship so you can have that happy relationship in less than 6 months and not move closer to divorce. So encourage you guys to do that. And if you join, you can start right away with our next group. Usually starts on Monday. And if you wait, though, you'll have to wait until the next starting date. And that's pending that the spots are not already full. We already had, I think, 3 or 4 clients join just over the weekend and another joined yesterday, which is awesome. So those spots are definitely filling up fast. So if you guys want to get one of the last spots open right now, I encourage you to go to highthrivecoaching.com/apply. I'll put that in the chat. It's highthrivecoaching.com/apply and see if you can get in to the program with one of those last spots. So now let's go to our marriage mythbuster, which is we should both want to make up after a fight. We should both want.
Yeah, we get these sort of things from like comments, either from clients that we're working with or comments in the Facebook group or on some of our YouTube videos. And I've seen this, like the idea behind it, like it makes sense, right? hey, we should both want to fix things after a fight. It's a frequent complaint. You know, we get about a partner who is shutting down, doesn't want to talk, they'll give the silent treatment. In other words, like, they don't want to make up after the fight. So what if I said that fights don't always have to be resolved immediately, and occasionally it's okay to let some things go? Now, this is like specifically talking about, you know, in my opinion, I think this is a lot about like that pursuer-avoider sort of dynamic. Like, is the person chasing after and making sure that everything's settled, or is the partner like pulling back and not really wanting to talk so much and more of the quiet type? That's a lot of what this goes on in when this is a problem within a relationship. Now, I want to be clear. Like, there is a difference between allowing things to sit for a little while and full on ignoring problems. And what I'm saying here, when I'm saying, hey, maybe fights don't need to be resolved immediately, and sometimes it's okay to let things go. You know, what I'm saying is, it's not always a bad thing if you and your partner don't always match up in terms of when you resolve conflict. And I want to emphasize that word again. It's when. Because I do think that, for the most part, concerns, problems need to be resolved at some point. Specifically, like, a lot of reasons why people get to the point where their marriage is falling apart and needing our help is because they've gone into some sort of dynamic, like maybe this pursuer-avoider dynamic, where like one partner is chasing after the other and the avoiding partner shuts down continually. And so there's a lot of tension around resolving issues. Or maybe both partners are the avoider type and they like to just sweep things under the rug. You know, we see a lot of different combinations with things like this. And especially when there's like a difference in how people like to approach conflict, it's important to keep that in mind, like that a lot of these things are just that, they're preferences. It's okay if it takes like a day or two, perhaps, to before you really resolve some big blow-ups or things like that. Perhaps one partner has more of a slow burn, meaning they simmer for a longish period of time with some of their emotions. Or perhaps one partner needs some time to process their thoughts and emotions. They may just need some more time to calm down. Perhaps one partner is unaware of how serious the other partner's feelings are surrounding the fight. And so they're saying, like, it's not a big deal. Let's just, you know, not talk about it. You know, the solution to all of these is a greater degree of transparency, communication, and flexibility. If someone needs more time, ideally that should be communicated. And at the same time, it can be really helpful for the partner seeking out a solution to seek out a time when discussion can happen. But basically what I'm getting at is, okay, like this idea, you know, we should both want to make up after a fight. Like, anytime you're introducing these shoulds, it's not a great idea. But like, it's not always the case. Like, it's okay if, you know, you wait a couple hours or till the next day when everyone's calm and can better talk about it. That's the whole point of what I'm trying to say today. Any thoughts at all on that, Heather?
Yeah, I mean, this is just like my marriage in a nutshell, basically. It's like, this has been one of the like biggest challenges to overcome, is that we do process things very differently. You know, I'm the one that wants to resolve things immediately. I don't like to sit on tension. I like to get to the point where things feel good again. And I like to express myself externally. I'm an external processor, so I like to talk it out because that helps me understand what's going on. My husband couldn't be further from that. And so he's an internal processor. He wants to take time to process through things and make sure that he understands it internally first. So we've really had to work together like a dance, right, on how to accommodate both of us. I'm not okay letting it sit for weeks. Ben probably would be, honestly. But I don't think it's very healthy. And for me, I can't handle it. It just does not work for me. So like you said here at this last point, is that when I want resolution, then I have to say, okay, Ben, when in the next 24 hours would be a good time to talk about this, right? At most 2 days is like what I can do without like truly going crazy. So, and I give him that time and that space. And then I have to be like, okay, we'll wait until, you know, tomorrow evening. That's when we'll talk about it, right? And by that time, we both have, you know, again, we've cooled things down for sure. Ben's had some time to do some internal processing, and we come at it with a more solution-based perspective than an emotional-based reaction, which is a good, healthy thing to do. So, yeah, it absolutely works. And no matter what your style is and your partner style is, maybe you're both the kind that just goes at it until, like, you know, there's some things that we can learn here too of some healthier and better ways. And there's skills that you can learn, and we can help you get there. So thank you, Mark. Yeah. All right. Next week, we're going to talk about, no, it does not take two people to save a marriage. We touched on that today, but we're going to go a little bit deeper into it because a lot of you are still saying, ah, takes two to tango. And we're here to help you see that if your spouse doesn't want to work on it with you, there is so much hope for you and how we actually help you do that. So thank you so much for joining us, and look forward to seeing you guys inside the coaching program and again on the podcast next week.
All right. See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.